To the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, March 18, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Anna Wilcox and Mel Gertov. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira, Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Galatas, and Tramel Gomes. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4. Now through April 15th, you will hear different marathons and series all brought to you by our talented programmers that make KBOO, KBOO. If you would like to listen to all of the fabulous specials, go to kboo.fm/ATNF4.
Did you know that KBOO podcasts all our news and talk shows?
You can find the podcast on KBOO's website, kboo.fm, on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Just search for your favorite show and hit subscribe to get all the latest episodes downloaded to your favorite device.
Or search for KBOO on iTunes, Google Play to get all the KBOO podcasts.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined by Daniel Hauser, the Deputy Director of the Oregon Center for Public Policy. We're here to talk about a report from that organization published this week called Strengthening the Earned Income Tax Credit Would Boost Economic Security for Nearly a Quarter Million Oregon Families. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being here. So I want to get into what this report finds, but first, can you give our listeners a little overview of what the Oregon Center for Public Policy does?
Absolutely. Here at the Oregon Center for Public Policy, we're really focused on digging into the data, analyzing the policies, and figuring out what's going on in Oregon's economy, what's going on for the families that are working hard to put food on the table for them and their kids and keep a roof above their families' heads. So we really love to be able to analyze just census data, agency data, really dig into anything we can get our hands on to understand what the circumstances are for families. And we consistently see and have for our more than 20 years that we've been in operation, consistently see that the families who are struggling most are families who are, you know, often working full time but are unable to pay the bills. And something that's been a really clear trend in the past handful of years is that the costs for so many of these families are rising and are really challenging their ability to make ends meet. And so we at the Oregon Center for Public Policy are lucky to be able to dig into issues around the tax code, around how workers are treated in the workplace, around how economic security can be advanced to figure out, you know, not just how bad is it for families, what's the data say, but also how can we actually, as a state, move things in the right direction, right? What are the policies and levers we can pull to improve outcomes for families?
Well, let's get into this new report to sort of set the table here. What is the earned income tax credit?
Yeah, the Oregon earned income tax credit, it's actually a share of a federal tax credit. So there's this federal earned income tax credit. This policy, it phases in as you get earned income. So if you're working part-time, maybe you're making $10,000, $15,000 a year, you'll start getting the EITC. It'll keep going up until it reaches this kind of plateau. And it depends on if you're, you know, what your tax filing status is. It depends on how many kids you have or if you don't have any children. It's kind of a convoluted federal tax credit in that sense. But essentially, you reach a plateau around $20,000 to $30,000 in income, you know, earned income, which is like income largely from wages or some self-employment income. And then it phases out until you reach around $60,000 to $65,000. Is kind of the end of the Oregon or of the federal earned income tax credit. So it's kind of a trapezoidal shape with a phase in and a phase out. But fundamentally, what it does, what the earned income tax credit does, is it's a refundable tax credit at the federal level. And so that means even if you don't owe any income taxes, you would still get a larger refund back from the federal government. And research has found that tens of thousands of Oregonians are actually pulled out of poverty by the federal EITC, and even tens of thousands of children are pulled out of poverty as well. So the earned income tax credit, even though how it's kind of designed is a little bit complicated, the bottom line on its impact and its outcomes for families is it puts thousands of dollars in families' pockets when they file their taxes every year. You know, we estimate that it's, you know, more than 200,000 Oregon working families benefit from the federal EITC. So what the state does, though, is the state's Oregon earned income tax credit just takes an extra little percentage on top of the federal. So let's say you get $1,000 federally from the earned income tax credit. Here in Oregon, you'll get an extra $90 as a baseline. And if you have a kid under three, you'll get an extra $120 because it's 9% and 12% of the federal EITC is what the state layers on top when you file your state income taxes.
So the Oregon earned income tax credit does have to be renewed, and that's something that the legislature is looking at this cycle with Oregon House Bill 2958. And your report advocates that it should be tweaked a little bit too, this Oregon earned income tax credit. How could it be improved, or where is that process at?
Yeah, so House Bill 2958, and we're really grateful to have a broad coalition of partners, lawmakers, and advocates pushing to make this happen. What it would do is it would increase those match rates of the federal EITC. So like I was describing, right now, it's 9% for sort of everyone as a baseline, and then 12% if you have a kid under three. What our bill would do is would bump that up to 20% as a baseline and 25% if you have a kid under three. So that would make a really significant difference in people's lives, just that percentage point jump up that the bill would include. So consider a family with three kids earning $30,000 a year. You know, they would get about $900 more from the EITC just on bumping up that that match percentage. The EITC also has some kind of, I don't know, unfortunate quirks. It's one of the joys of taking a percentage of a federal credit is that we end up with some of the failures of federal policymaking. So one of them is that if you don't have any kids, you can't get the EITC unless you're within the ages of 25 and 64. So put another way, if you're 23 and you don't have any kids and you would otherwise be eligible for the EITC, you won't get it. But you would get it if you're 27. If you're 63, you would get it. But if you're 67, you would not. And so House Bill 2958 also, thankfully, includes something where it'll just be 18 or older, kids or not, right? Let's get rid of that weird federal exclusion of young working families and old working families or older, and just ensure that regardless of your age, as long as you're, you know, 18 plus filing your own taxes, if you're otherwise eligible for the EITC, you should get it, right? And so we're grateful the bill fixes that inequity.
Which communities would be the most impacted by these changes to the earned income tax credit?
Yeah, the EITC is really focused on like low and middle income working families. So, you know, the bottom roughly 60% of Oregonians would capture pretty much the entirety of the EITC increase. So we're really talking about folks that are, you know, the median income, You know, a full-time minimum wage worker, folks like that would really get the most significant benefits from the EITC economically. We also were able to analyze, and I should mention that my colleague Tyler McInnes was the author and an analyst who really dug into this. So, so when I say we, I really mean he dug into this data. And what he found is that the Oregon Earned Income Tax Credit, increasing it, would disproportionately benefit Latino Oregonians and Black Oregonians, right? So, you know, we estimate that about 37% of Latino Oregonians would benefit from the EITC increase, about a quarter of Black Oregonians would, and about 17% of White Oregonians would. So obviously really widespread significant benefits across racial and ethnic groups from the EITC, but the benefits would disproportionately flow to families of color. We also found in the analysis that rural communities would also disproportionately benefit from the EITC increase. So both of these are largely reflections of how like low incomes are distributed in our economy and in our state. But what it does, you know, mean is that an increase in the EITC would disproportionately benefit people living in rural communities. And in the analysis that Tyler did that you can find on our website at occpp.org, we actually have estimates for every county in the state of how many households would benefit. And, you know, the largest benefits are in the most populous counties, just sort of by nature of the numbers. But it's definitely disproportionately more significant in rural communities. But even considering Multnomah County, you know, more than 40,000 families would benefit from this EITC increase, sending about $12 million to working families just in Multnomah County alone. And that's per year.
With the tax credit, with this larger amount of refund, what do folks typically spend that on? Is that something that you looked at?
Yeah, there's a lot of research at the national level in particular on, but also some state-specific data on what people spend their tax refunds on, what people spend, you know, if you increase their earned income tax credit or their child tax credits, where does that money go? And the data is clear. I mean, the overwhelming majority of that money goes to people meeting their basic needs, right? When we're talking about tax credits for families that are on the brink, are really on the edge of being able to afford the necessities for their family, they spend it on those necessities, right? They spend it on housing, they spend it on food, they spend it on clothing, they spend it on childcare. You know, they spend it on the things that their families are struggling most to afford, which makes total sense.
I was looking at the Oregon legislature listing for the House bill, and I wasn't seeing a lot of opposition. Is there any organized opposition to this House bill and to this extension of the Oregon Earned Income Tax Credit?
No, there's no organized opposition. The most frequent concern we hear raised is that it's expensive, right? You know, the Oregon Legislative Revenue Office has estimated that it would cost around $65 million per year to expand the EITC as the bill would do. One of the challenges is that for every dollar we spend on the EITC is a dollar that isn't available to spend on other important services and programs. And so I think that's something that often comes up with people in the legislature who are thinking about how and where to prioritize the available resources. And, you know, we are grateful that there's also a lot of literature out there that Tyler even highlights in his report, where the return on investment of investing in the earned income tax credit is really significant. And we know that in the long run, families and children who have more secure economic circumstances, right, that are able to eat consistently, you know, high quality food and aren't getting evicted, that they're going to have better long-term outcomes in education and their incomes and their, you know, stability of their own families when they become adults. And so it's really an investment in Oregon's future by building on the Oregon Earned Income Tax Credit. And that's really one of the key reasons why we think it's a worthwhile investment for the legislature. Not only is it just a moral, practical value that we should be helping people pay their bills today, and we should be providing these tax cuts to these working families. But it's also something that will return the benefit to the state in the long run, too. So it's really just a concern around the budget that I think slows down these sorts of proposals.
What do you think are the most important takeaways for listeners to get from this conversation?
Yeah, I hope the listeners will understand how important the tax code is at addressing economic inequality. I mean, I think fundamentally, the earned income tax credit, you know, today routes hundreds of millions of dollars federally, tens of millions of dollars from the state directly into the pockets of many low-income working families. I mean, hundreds of thousands of Oregon families benefit from their earned income tax credit today when they file their taxes. So it's really crucial that folks understand, like, we can make a difference in people's lives really efficiently, right? It's not like standing up a new program. There's not, you know, a lot of administrative cost. It's very administratively cheap to increase a number on a tax form. So I really hope that the listeners will take away that, like, we can make a difference in our families' abilities to afford our bills and to address rising costs by investing in the earned income tax credit. And that the tax code as a whole has a lot of opportunities for us to make things better for our families. I also think that, you know, and I'll say one of the other maybe downsides to using the earned income tax credit to address inequality is that you have to file your taxes, right? So fundamentally, if folks aren't out there filling out their taxes, then they're not able to benefit from the value that these sorts of policies can drive into their homes. And so there's fantastic tax assistance groups in the metro area and throughout the state. Metropolitan Family Services has a program called Cash Oregon that folks can go and get help from a volunteer, have them, you know, sit down with you and help you file your taxes. You know, we've heard stories of folks who go in after not filing for a few years and are able to get thousands of dollars back on their taxes. So would really just encourage, you know, insofar as that's a downside, we are also attempting to address it. And I want to make sure folks are also aware that there's a new public option to file your taxes, to claim your EITC and your child tax credits. If you go to directfile.irs.gov, DirectFile is the program, you can file your taxes. Many Oregonians, there's a little bit of eligibility restrictions, but many Oregonians are able to file their taxes publicly for free, secure. It's really an amazing, amazing new program that this is just the first year that we've launched. So I hope folks understand, you know, both of those takeaways. Number one is that the tax system can be an incredibly powerful tool for addressing inequality. And number two, that folks need to claim their credits, right? This only works if people file their taxes and if families are actually claiming the potentially thousands of dollars they could be getting. I mean, the federal EITC alone can be, you know, upwards of $7,000 per year if you claim it.
If folks are interested in learning more, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, I think if folks want to learn more about our research and our analysis of things like the earned income tax credit, going to OCPP.org. We have various social media accounts, email sign up. Just take a look at our site. There's lots of great stuff there on this and other issues addressing economic insecurity and the challenges for workers in our state. For folks that want to, you know, file their taxes, I need help with that, I do think directfile.irs.gov is the right place to start. And if folks need more help than just kind of walking themselves through a service, I think reaching out to Cash Oregon, the Metropolitan Family Services Program, is really a fantastic way for folks in the metro area to get that type of assistance.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up? Anything we didn't touch on?
You know, there's other interesting implications of the earned income tax credit that I didn't really spend as much time focusing on, but are worth considering. I mean, we know that this is not just a tremendous opportunity to get a big boost in the outcomes for children, but because it's more heavily weighted on the youngest children, in many ways, it provides the greatest benefit on our long-term success as a state. So, you know, there's a tremendous amount of research that the younger you can improve a child's economic security and the stability of their family, the bigger benefits there will be in that child's development. So I think the fact we really focus an even larger earned income tax credit on kids under three and their families is really a testament to the focus of this policy on helping Oregon's children thrive in the long run. I think the other piece of it is that many people who get this EITC, like we talked about, spend it on the needs, spend it on their rent, spend it on food. They spend it locally by and large as well. You know, there's interesting research on how low and middle income families are more likely to really spend any extra dollar they get and to spend it pretty quickly in their local economy. So I believe not only will it be a benefit to the state, but also to small businesses all around the state if we're able to expand their earned income tax credit and invest more in our families.
Well, Daniel, thank you so much for taking the time to talk us through that.
Yeah, you bet. It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
That was Daniel Hauser, the Deputy Director of the Oregon Center for Public Policy, speaking with me about a report published by OCPP this week. It's called Strengthening the Earned Income Tax Credit Would Boost Economic Security for Nearly a Quarter Million Oregon Families. More information is online at ocpp.org. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings. Listening to KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined by Peter McBride, park ranger at Beverly Beach State Park, to talk about Spring Whale Watch Week happening along the Oregon coast from Saturday, March 22nd through Sunday, March 30th. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being with us. Let's get right into it. For folks who don't know, what is Spring Whale Watch Week?
So we are going to be having gray whales that are traveling up from Baja, Mexico, and most of them going all the way to Alaska. And during the spring months, we get to see them as they're passing through the coastal waters. We do a Spring Whale Watch Week. It's on the earlier part of the migration when we get to see a lot of them as they're coming by. And hopefully we'll have, you know, thousands of people come join us for whale watching. We have about 200 volunteers that will be helping people during Spring Whale Watch Week to hopefully find whales and you know, learn more about what we're seeing out there.
Can you tell me a little bit about the migration that whales are going through? Like, where are they at in their migration as they're passing by the Oregon coast?
So a lot of them have been on the road for several weeks. Many of them, this journey to go all the way up to Alaska, it can take them a couple months. And so we're you know, they still have a long ways to go once they go by the Oregon coast. But during the summer months, the majority of the gray whale population will be on the coast or in the waters off of Alaska. And it's really fun to see them as they're coming through here.
What is the status of this gray whale population? What are their numbers like?
So last year, NOAA released some numbers that was, you know, it was good to hear that the population is somewhere between 17 to 19,000 gray whales, and they have had five previous years of being in decline. I think by around it had been somewhere close to about 14,500 before last year.
Yeah, I understand that there was an unusual mortality event in the past decade and that their population is on the rise, which is good to hear.
Yeah, it was great to have that news. Last year they declared an end to this last unusual mortality event, so that was very exciting to hear.
Well, what exactly does it look like at Spring Whale Watch Week when folks are whale watching from the coast?
So we have 14 locations. The furthest north is up in Fort Stevens, and we go all the way down to Harris Beach on the southern coast. At these locations, we're going to have volunteers from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Stationed during Whale Watch Week. And sometimes we hope for good weather, and we'll have sunshine, and other times it can be pretty rainy out there. It definitely helps to have clear skies to be able to see the whales. A lot of the whale traffic, they could be anywhere between 1 to 5 miles offshore. So it really helps if you have a pair of binoculars to be able to see them.
What are some of the common questions that you get about gray whales when folks are coming out to see them?
Well, probably one of the more common questions, most common is, you know, where are they at and how to find them? And so what we're looking for is their spouts. And when they exhale, it produces a white cloud that can be 10 to 12 feet in height. And that's how we identify their location. So if you're kind of looking out on the water and all of a sudden you see a white cloud appear, then it's a good time to get your binoculars up to get a closer look. Again, they can be, you know, over a mile offshore, and so they can still be a little distance out there. But it's pretty typical where they'll spout, and then, you know, 10, 15 seconds go by, and then you'll get another spout. And that'll happen a few times, and then they'll go for a longer dive. And that dive can be somewhere between 3 to 5 minutes before they come back up again.
I think you've touched on it a little bit, but do you have any recommendations for what makes for a good whale watching trip?
I think definitely being prepared for the weather. That should hopefully help. Our weather out here is so variable, especially during the spring. So having rain gear, warm clothing, but you never know. Sometimes we do get warm, sunny days from time to time, too. So it's good to have layers when you come out here. Binoculars, that definitely helps. Once you're able to kind of see where the whale's at, then to get the binoculars to be able to get a closer view. Also, at our whale watch locations, we will have binoculars available for visitors if they're stopping between 10 and 1.
How long have you been involved in this whale watch, either, you know, at either part of the migration for the whales?
I started about 9 years ago. And it's been great. There's nothing like being able to share that moment with folks and being able to see whales, and especially, you know, if it's the very first whale they've ever seen, that can be really special.
Do you have like a best whale that you've ever seen?
Oh, that'd be a hard one. At the Whale Center, we get a spend a lot of time whale watching, and so. You know, gray whales, they don't breach very often, but every once in a while we'll have a breach happen, and that's when they get enough speed that they can get about half of their body out of the water, then a big splash back down. It's always exciting to see it when that happens.
If our listeners are interested in finding out more about Spring Whale Watch Week on the coast, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can find more information on the Oregon State Parks website. And then we also have another website called orwhalewatch.org, and that gives a lot of information about whale watching as well.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up? Anything we didn't touch on?
We're really excited to be doing this again, this program. It's been going on for over 40 years, and so we're just happy to be able to have everyone out, and hopefully we'll have some good weather and we'll see some whales.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
That was Peter McBride, Park Ranger at Beverly Beach State Park, speaking with me about Spring Whale Watch Week, happening along the Oregon coast from Saturday, March 22nd through Sunday, March 30th. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Althea.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information